Well, that was a lot of promos, but we've got a show lined up for you. You're listening to Sexy in Van City Radio, 101.9 FM on CITR. And tonight's topic, I don't know what to call it. Should we call it A War and Peace? Romance? The art of romance? The art of war in romance? Or perhaps I should just be straight up and just call it vengeance. Where sometimes when we're in relationships, we get frustrated. We start off with the, oh my goodness, I'm so in love, and just get so over the moon about someone. And because we get so in the moon about someone, sometimes we get really frustrated. And so tonight's show is going to be about vengeance. And to seek revenge or not to seek revenge. So being really aware about what we choose to do. So in terms of tonight's edition of Sexy in Van City, we are going to be talking about whether or not revenge is sexy or not. There is a lot, and I know I'm making lots of jokes right now, but a lot of things, like, for example, revenge is best served cold. Or the best revenge is living well. I personally think the best revenge is living well, but it starts with when you meet somebody, and if they make you angry and they hurt you, which usually hurt people are the ones that tend to want revenge because they feel very vulnerable, very careful, and it's, I think it's natural to want to hurt the person who hurts you. And according to Diane Kirchner, and this is from Finding True Love in 2009. She says that this tendency to want to hurt someone who hurts us comes from cerebrum, the primitive part of the brain, which is wired to fight or to flight. And she says that hate and love are on the same coin, which I think we know that because if you don't love somebody, it's really hard to hate them. And a few of the most passionately in love couples have come close to actually killing themselves. And there is a myth in this culture that revenge gives you relief from your upset, that it can make you feel better or help you get over your relationship. And in terms of, there is a project that is, they called the Stanford Forgiveness Project, that apparently not forgiving people that hurt you can lead to more stress, health issues, including heart disease and cancer, negative changes in blood pressure, muscle tension, and immune response. So, which that makes sense, because I know in terms of the yoga world, sometimes we say, if you've got issues, they're in your tissues, which is why yin yoga, which helps release your fascia, which is almost like saran wrap that wraps around your muscles and other tissues in the body, by being able to breathe and just allow the fascia to relax, it allows the muscles to relax, it allows the tissues to relax. And then from there, we're able to release some of the things that get stuck in our muscles. So with that, it's really, really, really important to be able to let go of things. The other thing as well is in terms of some of the stats, and lack of forgiveness can also lead to a lack of personal awareness and growth, because as we get stuck in this one blip where somebody has harmed us, they have wronged us, we need to be cautious of that, because it takes time for us to take a look at what did they do wrong and where is the learning lessons, because for every bad thing that happens, there really is a dark gift, something that we're meant to learn by it. So by analyzing our own thinking about how this person, how they hurt us or damaged us, but also sometimes there's that piece where it's, I can never love, I can never trust again. So start with asking yourself, is it really true? And really breathe into that, because there are sometimes somebody else can act horrifically, but we do have control over our own thoughts and reactions. So check in and just see how you may have contributed to the problems. How did you set up the situation in ways you acted or did not act? And by thinking about that and seeing what types of choices they are, and sometimes that not only makes us feel like less of a victim if we can see our own hand in what happens, but as well as that, it can also be really, really, really helpful for us in regards to setting and establishing healthy boundaries. And sometimes people feel that if they really fall truly, madly, deeply in love, that they don't really need to set boundaries. But we do. Healthy boundaries allow us to love passionately within them. It's kind of like in Chinese medicine. What they do is they strengthen their energetic fields around the heart, because the acupuncture point that is where the heart is called the primordial child, which is considered the original spirit in the body. And what it does is it loves passionately, and by providing healthy boundaries, a healthy sense of order, our original spirit, our primordial child, is able to love passionately within there without harming its body, mind, or spirit. So just checking in there, it's really important. As well as that, by having healthy boundaries, it enables us to really know what we want. And of course, things will change as we get to know people. We evolve from day to day in our lives. But in regards to evolving day to day, there are some key core things based on what we value. What do we really, really want? So I'm not saying go out and make a list saying, okay, I want a guy who wears argyle socks, or I want a girl who has the exact shade of cerulean blue eyes. You know, those kinds of things. Those aren't what I mean. What I mean is things like, what are their money values? Are they a saver or are they a spender? You can still work out relationships with that, but starting it off with just your basics. What are things important to you? So do you like to save money, or do you like to spend everything? In terms of your personal things, do you want to live in Vancouver? Or do you want to be moving to another town, because it can be really expensive to live here? Things like, do you work out? Do you eat organic? Or are you eating McDonald's like 24/7? Things like that. What's important? So things like maybe food sustainability, eating healthy, growing your own food. All these types of things are examples of certain types of values. So it starts with that, making sure that we take what we learn from revenge, learning to do things to really establish. If you're not really sure, because say you've just broken up with somebody and you are in one of those states where you're kind of in shock, sometimes it's really good to go see a counselor. On campus on UBC, we do have opportunities to connect with the counseling department. Sometimes they are looking for people to be basically volunteers, so that way they can test. But in addition to that, there are a lot of wonderful resources out there. If you've had somebody who's physically harmed you, there are some wonderful organizations, both on campus as well as organizations like WAVA, out there, and Battered Women's Support Services, that offer some incredible opportunities. And in terms of for men who may have experienced violence at the hands of men or in the LGBTQ community, there are some wonderful resources at community as well, with a Q, and just in regards to violence, etc. So just making sure that you keep yourself safe and healthy. And in terms of that, so starting with counseling, perhaps taking some time for yourself, doing things like physically getting it out of your body, perhaps going to a yoga class or meditation to really get it, give yourself a chance to clear your mind, give yourself a chance to breathe. In terms of the whole issues and tissues thing, perhaps taking a class just to release. And as you let yourself release some of that emotion, some of the anger, the frustration, whatever it is physically, even going for a run, whatever it is for you that makes you feel good, do it. Making sure that you're writing, however you need to get it out, even if you need to talk where you're recording yourself and then deleting it afterwards, all that stuff can be really helpful. Reaching out to friends, if possible. And try not to feel like you're being a burden, but sharing and just making sure that you're there for your friends as well. Perhaps volunteering can be really helpful as well, because in that way it pulls you out of your head and makes you realize that there's other things going on in life. So some of that stuff can be really, 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 really helpful. Doing things to take care of yourself by taking stock of who you are now, who you are outside of relationship, can be very helpful. If you need to, if you're finding it's very difficult, or you're getting triggered and perhaps going out and drinking or doing drugs a lot, perhaps taking a look at a 12-step program and seeing what you might be able to do. The other thing in terms of transforming yourself, seeing what can be really helpful. And in terms of seeking revenge, does it actually make us feel better? Sometimes it does, where it's that immediate satisfaction. But I think it's really important to remember that if somebody hurt us, at some point that they were hurt too. That doesn't mean that we want to let people walk all over us. But perhaps it's easier to eventually, after we've expressed our emotions, letting go. And if this is something you really, really want to share with somebody, and they're out of your life where they're not returning your texts, maybe they even broke up with you via text, you can write them a letter. You don't need to send it. But what you can do is sit down, perhaps with a really good friend, write out that letter, and then have your friend just sitting there and read the letter to them. Once you've been able to say it out loud, sometimes it helps, then go back to pen and paper and write out a response as if it was from that person who you feel has wronged you. And having it a letter where they're explaining why they did what they did. And with that, sometimes that really helps. And then have your friend who's with you take that letter and read it to you. As you listen, open, she can actually receive. So then that way you actually are not only heard, but you can also hear their point of view as well. So that can be really helpful for those times where you're not able to connect with that person who's harmed you or hurt you very badly. In terms of boundaries as well, as I mentioned, it's very important to establish healthy boundaries. And part of that starts with knowing who we are and that we don't need to do things. So say, for example, your partner has an affair. And you choose to retaliate by having an affair yourself, chances are the relationship will end painfully because both will lose trust in each other and lose respect for themselves. But if, on the other hand, being very clear that monogamy was sacred and having healthy, strong boundaries, perhaps you can make a choice at that stage whether or not to forgive. And perhaps through counseling, be able to move on and see what's actually at the root of the relationship, why the infidelity happened in the first place, or making a strong stance to recognize that things may not ever change and leaving and being able to build a new life for themselves. So that's really important. The other thing, too, sometimes if there has been an affair and somebody wants vengeance, perhaps one of the big things is love. Love is forgiving. So most relationships, because it is growing, each person is moving and growing day by day, moment by moment. And because of that, people are going to rub each other the wrong way. And as they grow together, there's going to be times where they will hurt each other. And part of it is learning about what is and what is not acceptable within the relationship. And so to let a relationship flourish, I think we really need to have acceptance on both sides and recognizing that each of you will sometimes make mistakes. Taking it through and being really clear about your feelings are important parts of intimacy. So forgiveness is a necessary part of this process, and it's much more beneficial for the relationship than revenge. And as I mentioned, sometimes revenge, you get that lovely malicious satisfaction, but over time it doesn't really solve things. A few years ago, there was a group of Swiss researchers that scanned the brains of people who had been wronged during an economic exchange game. These people had trusted their partners to split a pot of money with them, only to find that their partners had chosen to keep the loot for themselves. The research gave people a chance to punish their greedy partners, and for a full minute, as the victims contemplated revenge, the activity in their brain was recorded. The decision caused a rush of neural activity in the caudic nucleus, an area of the brain that is known to process rewards, and in And this is also the area that you'll see that gets very happy and delights whenever there's cocaine or nicotine use, anything that has to do with addiction. And these findings that were published in a 2004 issue of Science gave a physiological confirmation to what the scorns have been saying for years, that revenge can be a sweet. But a thirst for vengeance is nothing if not timeless. And with that, it just keeps moving forward. But in the past few years, psychological scientists have discovered many ways in which the practice of revenge fails to fulfill its sweet expectations. So as we take that minute and really take time to really think about it, even if you get revenge on paper, because, as mentioned, the scientists have discovered that the practice of revenge does fail in its sweet expectations. Behavioral scientists have observed that instead of quenching this hostility, revenge can actually prolong the unpleasantness of the original offense, and that merely bringing harm upon an offender is not enough to satisfy a person's vengeful spirit. They've also found that instead of delivering justice, revenge often creates only a cycle of retaliation, in part because of one's own moral equilibrium rarely aligns with another's. And so the upshot about these insights, it's a better sense of why the pursuit of revenge has actually persisted through the ages, despite tasting a lot more sourer than advertised. The other thing to become aware of in regards to revenge is that sometimes we are not always healthy, because many early psychological views towards revenge were based on a more popular emotional catharsis. So this idea, although it's still widely held in popular culture, suggests that venting aggression ultimately purges it from the body. So if you look at that, like say kids, where they scream and freak out right away. But empirical research fails to validate the theory in this catharsis. That's interesting. And some recent work contradicts it entirely. So in 2002, there was a paper in the Personality and Social Psychological Bulletin. An APS fellow, Brad Bushman of the Ohio State University, reported higher levels of aggression in people who had supposedly vented their anger than those who had done nothing at all. I'd be very curious if he did it with kids as well. But granted, kids don't really enact revenge. They usually just throw a tantrum and release it. They shake all that stuff out of their body, just like animals do when they get angry. They shake, they bark, they growl, they get that stuff out. So if a cathartic activity fails to dissolve the hostility in general, what is to say revenge will dissolve the anger caused by one's offense in particular? So that doubt laid the foundation for a recent series of tests by Kevin Carlsmith of Colgate, who conducted a research with APS fellows and charter members Timothy Wilson of the University of Victoria and Daniel Gilbert of Harvard. And so Wilson and Gilbert have often found that people make powerful mistakes when they predict how they're going to feel about something in the future. And with Carl Smith, they asked whether people could be wrong about the expected emotional benefits of revenge as well. Because perhaps if revenge is sweet, or perhaps in the words of Francis Bacon are more accurate, a man that studieth revenge keeps his own wounds green, which otherwise would heal and do well. So perhaps revenge is more like putting a band-aid on something, so it never actually really heals, because what it really needs is just to whip off that band-aid and let the wound see the light of day, letting it connect with the air and allowing the air to start to dry it, start to heal it, start to move it forward. So that's pretty much food for thought. So as we move forward in that study, Carl Smith and his collaborators placed participants into groups of four and gave them each a dollar to which they could invest in a group pot or keep it for themselves. And to entice this investment, the researchers promised to add a 40% dividend to the group total before redistributing the boosted pot among all four members. And this created a classic experimental dilemma. What's best for the group, for all four members to donate $1, but what's best for the individual is to keep the dollar and also receive one quarter of the final distribution, which grows through the investments of the others. In other words, as the researchers put it, to be a free rider. So by the end of the trial, participants discovered that one member, secretly controlled by the researchers, had acted as a free rider. Some of the participants, called non-punishers, learned about this moral violation, but were given no chance to do anything about it. Others, known as punishers, who were given a chance to avenge the selfish behavior by reducing the earnings of the offender. The decision to punish carried a small fee to stimulate the personal cost of the revenge. So both the punishers and the non-punishers rated their feelings immediately after the game, as well as 10 minutes later. A final group, dubbed the Forecasters, had no power to punish, but recorded how they expected to feel if they could. So the findings were exactly, so again, we come back to the Spaniard, and more like what Francis Bacon had said, much more eloquently than me. So punishers actually felt worse than the forecasters predicted that they would have felt had they been given the opportunity to be punishers. And the punishers felt worse than the non-punishers, despite getting the chance to take the revenge. And 10 minutes into the game, the punishers continued to brood over their free rider significantly more than the others did, an increased ruination that perverted them from moving forward, as the researchers surmised. So all told, Carl Smith and company concluded in a 2008 journal of the personality and social psychology that people believe that revenge will make them feel better and gain closure, when in actuality, punishers ruminate on their deed and actually feel worse than those who cannot avenge a wrong. So I thought that's quite interesting. And what Carl Smith says is he thinks that uncertainty prolongs and enhances emotional experiences. And one of the things that avengers do unintentionally is to prolong the unpleasant encounter. And those who don't have a chance to take revenge are forced, in a sense, to move forward and focus on something different. And because of that, you know what? They feel happier. So it's interesting. And in terms of that, most people fail to feel bad after feeling revenge. And so, but just because of that, as I said, it does not mean that revenge can never feel good. And this hunt for this pleasant side of retribution has driven some of the works of a German psychologist, Mario Galowitzer. And Mario says that taking revenge generally has a low interest in those instances in which revenge can be sweet. And in terms of that, he is wondering what exactly makes revenge sweeter for the avenger. So he designed some elaborate experiments in which he says it takes careful calibration to provoke a strong defense from all the participants while being able to stay within ethical boundaries of institutional reviews. And with that, he ended up exploring two theories of why revenge could be satisfying. The first is comparative suffering, which is the idea that seeing an offender suffer refers emotional balance to the universe. So kind of like an eye for an eye. And if this were the case, the victims of wrongdoings who learn of an offender's misfortune, should they feel equally satisfied whether or not they were personally responsible for that misfortune? The second theory is understanding the hypothesis, which holds the offender's suffering is not enough on its own to truly achieve satisfactional revenge. Instead, the avenger must be assured that the offender has made a direct connection in between the retaliation and the offender. So it's interesting in terms of just some of the work that has been out there in regards to revenge, because there's quite a bit of work that is out there about revenge. And then the other piece is, which we really need to look at, is beyond revenge. So there's a long history of vengeance in art that suggests a basic instinct for retribution ingrained in the human spirit. So say things like things that happen in undeveloped countries, like things like revenge has been cited for a factor in 1 in 5 murders in developed countries. And in a report in 2002, between 1975 and 2000, 3 in 5 school shootings in the U.S. were driven by vengeance. And on the lighter end of the spectrum, the popular urge for payback has inspired some business ventures. So that is interesting. And with that, with revenge, why does it still feel really, 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 really good for people? And why do people keep doing it? And with that, there is a study that Michael McCullen and Benjamin Tabak of the University of Miami with Robert Kurzba of the University of Pennsylvania just prepared a book chapter that outlines the payback's adaptive function. And what they say is that individual acts of vengeance serve as group announcements that certain behaviors will elicit retaliation. So in other words, the purpose of revenge might be less about responding to one particular offense than about perverting several others. So when you look at it this way, revenge can provide a great cultural benefit, leading to more cooperation and thereby productive society. So in exchange for its great personal costs, the function takes a couple forms. This is what they argue. The first is through direct deterrence. Simply put, revenge is directly discouraging an aggressor from repeating the same offense. The second is indirect. So by avenging certain actions, a person can establish a general definition of acceptable conduct. And in this process and future confrontations, in this sense, reputation precludes revenge. And the third factor is beyond simple deterrence of negative behaviors. And this actually coerces beneficial ones, which is to understand an idea. So really putting yourself in their shoes. It helps to envision life as an early human, so being a kid, and supposing in that existence that you and a neighbor must take turns guarding your camp from a cheetah. And if you fall asleep one night and the animal kills a neighbor's child, this negligence in natural selections is fully similar to killing the neighbor's child directly. And the threat of revenge in response to such a failed cooperation, a concept known as altruistic punishment, would entice you to stay awake with the expectation, of course, that your neighbor will do the same on his watch. And provision of this revenge, intact as it may seem, modern civilization can feel fortunate that resisting the urge to retaliate is even more common. And the decision to forego vengeance is sometimes not necessarily born of human kindness, but on the contrary, the body may have evolved some type of inner scale that weighs the adaptive benefits of revenge against its variable costs. And from the potential of retaliation and the severance of important relationships, so more often than today, this tips in favor of forgiveness, which is pretty cool, as we do have to have some way of maintaining relationships, even though it's inevitable that some will harm your interests given time, which is what McCullough says in this study. And he's also the author of Beyond Revenge, The Evolution of Forgiveness Instinct, which came out in 2008. And what we think has evolved in a secondary system, the forgiveness instinct. And this will enable people to suppress the desire for revenge and signal their willingness to continue. And even though someone has harmed their interest, assuming that the person will refrain to doing it in the future. This may not be the most uplifting interpretation of how the brain governs human relationships, but at least it's a peaceful one. We're going to take a really quick short break, and we will be back in just a moment.
I want to try something a little different? Well then, how about listening to Asian music? Now, I don't mean it like...
Open Gangnam Style!
Gangnam Style! Nor like...
She bangs! Oh baby, but she moves!
I'm talking about a little more like... And a little more like... And also a little more like... And definitely something like... So tune in to Asian Wave 101, playing you the best of Chinese and Korean pop, Wednesdays from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m., only on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
A man of average height got out of a black sedan holding a baseball bat. He approached a dark-haired woman, hit her in the head, then hit her again as she fell to the ground. He continued to beat her ribs, chest, legs, and face until she lost consciousness. He then hit her again, got into his car, and drove away. This is a scene from a video game played by millions. If we want violence against women to stop, shouldn't we stop treating it like a game? Join the conversation at #NotOkay.
And that was, I thought, was very appropriate. That was Port Juvie and their song Revenge, which I thought was rather appropriate considering what we've been talking about for the show. And with that, the next piece in terms of revenge is forgiveness, which, as much as we hate to go there, so in terms of, according to the Mayo Clinic, the definition of forgiveness is letting go of grudges and bitterness. So when someone you care about hurts you, you hold on to anger, resentment, and thoughts of revenge, or you can embrace forgiveness and move forward. So like McCullough said in the research, we can move forward, and that seems to be the most healthy way to do that for society, etc. So we learn, we put ourselves in that person's shoes. And even if we choose not to forget, we do need to forgive so we can let go. Because by being able to forgive them, it also allows us to forgive ourselves. Because sometimes that's the hardest part, where we do deep down, even though we lash out and we're angry at that person who hurts us, we're really kind of mad at ourselves for letting it happen in the first place. So we do spend time, because sometimes it's easier to be mad at somebody else because we're pretty hard on ourselves. And even then, we go through parts of it for, in terms of those waves of things to get to forgiveness. We do go through and we do blame ourselves. We play the shame blame game, and it can be really heart-wrenching. So by being able to forgive someone else, sometimes that's a little easier and allows us to let go of those pieces of that are stuck in us, like little shards of glass. With that, it's important, because if we don't, as I mentioned at the very top of the show, to quote some of my favorite yoga instructors, when you don't forgive, when we hold on to emotion, we have issues. And they stay in our tissues, which can affect our physical health. If you look at some of Dr. Gabor Mate's work, who's in the physician who has done some amazing work with a book called Scattered Minds, Minds and Bodies, and in addition, In the Realm of Hungry Ghosts, who's one of my personal favorites and definitely on my to-meet list at some point, and I'll have to have him on this show. But in regards to that, the issues that we do not express stay in our tissues, so it's so important for us to forgive, learn to let go, because all of us at some point have been hurt by the words of others. So whether or not it was through your parents, whether or not it was through a sibling, maybe you were bullied in school, whatever it was, just making sure that we are able to nourish ourselves and be kind. So in terms of that, it would be really, really, really wonderful just to be able to connect, etc. And with that, I'm just hoping that everything that you're able to let go. Because in terms of forgiveness, when you make a decision to let go of resentment and thoughts of revenge, and that way, not only get that stuff out of your tissues, but it allows you to focus on the more positive stuff in your life. And part of that is sometimes actually really going to that space, and this may sound crazy, but allowing yourself to actually feel that anger, feel that sadness, feel that frustration, and really allow yourself to live in that for a moment, breathe in it, seeing how does it feel in your body, and breathing into that space. Breathing into those tissues and asking if it's got a message for you. Because sometimes when that stuff's there, it comes up in terms of you'll see images. Other times you'll hear actual words. And so breathing it and then sending that anger, that stuff that's there. This may sound crazy, but send it love. Tell it you love it. Because a lot of times when we have that stuff and it's actually stuck in our body, it's stuff that we've manifested to protect ourselves. So really send it tons and tons and tons of love. Thank it for trying to take care of it as best as it knows how. and really acknowledging it. And if there's things that you've learned, tell it that you've learned it. And by doing that, you can allow it and tell it that you no longer need it. You no longer need those emotions that stay, that stuck, that keep you stagnant. It's like literally, as you do that, it's allowing yourself to rip off that band-aid of wounds that have been stuck emotionally for years sometimes, and letting those wounds no longer fester, letting them see the sweet light of day, letting them heal, feeling the air on them, and feeling them dry, feeling them grow, and be whole. Because when we choose to do that, it makes a huge difference to our lives. Some of the benefits of forgiving someone is healthy relationships, greater spiritual, body, mind, and spirit well-being. And these are from directly from the Mayo Clinic. Less anxiety, stress, and hostility. Lower blood pressure. Less signs of depression. Stronger immune system, improved heart health, and higher self-esteem. So in terms of that, it's important because sometimes it feels like it's so easy to hold a grudge. And when we do that, it takes up space that doesn't allow us to actually really live. It doesn't allow us to really get in and really experience positive stuff. It's kind of like if you think of emotions where we keep them on inside our bookcase of life. And if we don't express them, where they get dusty, they stay there. Maybe there's even like silverfish crawling all over them, or bed bugs with that, where they just want to eat it and fester. And then it gets kind of moldy and really disgusting because we don't take care of it. It's so important that we air those books out. We air that negative emotion, because if it's there, that book's taking up space on the shelf, which could be an opportunity to experience maybe a positive story, a positive book. But because when we're so shrouded in our negativity, sometimes it's really difficult to see the wonderful, beautiful stuff that's there, which can be really exciting. So in terms of things, what are some of the effects of holding a grudge? As I mentioned, it can really affect your physical health as well as your emotional. It stays in your tissues. So if you're unforgiving, you're going to be bringing that lens of, you know how they say rose-colored glasses? Well, it's kind of like looking at the world the way maybe the Grinch or Scrooge looked at it in the Christmas Carol, where what you want to do is actually clean those glasses and be able to let go of the anger and bitterness that causes you to see things. So seeing things that aren't really there. And it changes our perception. So even when our gut instinct's going off, it's going off because we haven't cleared the lens. We're not really seeing what's actually there. And sometimes we become so wrapped up in the wrong, we can't even enjoy what's actually going on right now, this very moment. Other effects of holding a grudge can be becoming anxious, getting depressed, sometimes becoming despondent, where we feel that life lacks meaning or purpose, or that you don't really believe in anything, or you don't trust yourself. And when you don't trust yourself, then we lose valuable, enriching connectedness with others, where it's hard to connect. So forgiveness is hard. And that's one thing I am going to say, because even as much as we're talking about forgiveness moving forward, you really need to feel the feelings. Sometimes people will try and jump right into forgiveness and not let themselves actually feel the anger, feel the frustration, etc. So in terms of reaching a state of forgiveness, it's a commitment to the process of change. And it's important to really see the benefits, just like you would with any other goal. So see the value of forgiveness and what it would mean to your life if you actually were able to forgive and let go of somebody, of something that somebody did, of your perception that somebody did you wrong. So by being able to let that go, see how it would change your life. What would your life be like if you did not have that and that that wasn't stopping you from doing stuff. On a lighter end, it would be kind of like people saying, if you know, if I just lost 10 pounds, my life would be better. If I just had a boyfriend, it'd be better. Those types of things, as opposed to just being there right now. Well, take a look at the facts of the situation. Look at how you reacted and look at it to see how this combination has affected your health, your life, and your well-being. And then choose to forgive the person who's offended you when you're ready. So take that time. Allow yourself to really feel those emotions. But when you're ready, choose to forgive them. And then from there, it's pretty cool because what it does is it moves you away from your role as victim. And it helps release the control and power from the offending person and the situation and all that stuff, where sometimes it's like being in a prison where it doesn't allow you to experience new and wonderful things. And as you let go of the grudge, you'll no longer be defining your life by how you've been hurt. You may even find compassion and understanding. And if when I know we talked about this earlier in the show, but I just want to refresh everybody. If we feel that we can't forgive someone, and it can be challenging, and especially if it's someone who has hurt you, won't talk to you, they won't admit that they're wrong, or won't even speak to it, so you're not able to get that closure. So try and consider that situation from the other person's perspective. And as I mentioned earlier, doing that letter writing exercise where you write a letter to yourself, to that person, expressing your point of view, and then writing one back to yourself and having a friend read it so you can actually get that closure and hear what you imagine that person feels. Ask yourself why that person would behave in such a way. And perhaps, maybe, you would have reacted similarly if faced in the same situation. And then take a look at the times that you've forgiven others and those people who have forgiven you. And then perhaps, I'm a huge freak when it comes to journaling. Please write. Or a prayer if you're spiritual, or use guided meditation. Or maybe find somebody that you found to be wise and compassionate, like a mental health provider, a counselor. As I mentioned, there is stuff on campus that is available. And become aware that forgiveness is a process, and even small hurts may need to be revisited and forgiven over and over again, especially in cases like infidelity, etc. And one of the questions that sometimes people ask is, just because I forgive somebody, does that guarantee reconciliation? And it can, but that's not always the case, because sometimes it may be impossible. Sometimes the offender's died or been unwilling to communicate with you. And so in those cases, perhaps reconciliation isn't appropriate, but you can still forgive, just like I mentioned with using the letter writing exercise. And if you do have to interact with the person who hurts you and you don't want to, it may be uncomfortable. And if you are in a situation, because it would be really incredibly stressful and could be very anxiety ridden. So remembering that you can choose to attend or avoid specific functions or gatherings. And if you do choose to attend, don't be surprised by awkwardness and maybe even more intense feelings. And really check in with yourself and see where you're at and do what you need to do and what seems to be best. And try and keep an open heart and mind. And you may find that the experience encourages you to move forward with forgiveness. And if the person you forgiveness doesn't change, that's not the point of forgiveness. It's basically how it's going to affect your life by bringing you peace, getting it out of your tissues. And it takes away the power that other person has in your life. And say you want to be forgiveness as you're thinking about wrongs that, as you're trying to forgive somebody, maybe you start thinking about some wrongs that you've done onto others. And with that, see of what ways, and I know it's one of the steps in a 12-step program as well, and it's to really, honestly, really take stock of yourself and acknowledge the wrongdoings you've done and how these wrongs have affected others. And if at the time, actively judging yourself too harshly, hey, you're human and you make mistakes. And if you're truly sorry about something you've said or done, consider admitting it to those you've harmed. Speak of how you feel, your regret, and specifically ask for forgiveness without making excuses. But you have to bear in mind you cannot force somebody to forgive you. People need time and to come to forgiveness in their own way. And whatever the outcome is, try to commit to treating people with kindness, compassion, empathy, and respect. So that's some of the really key things. I know this is a little bit of a heavy show in regards to that, but there's so many things where I could have made the show very Cosmo-esque in regards to stories of revenge, but it would be, and I think we've all been there at some point doing things. So let's hope that things have changed and things are going to evolve. If you would like to move forward in things and you're really not sure, talk to somebody. And as I said, there are resources on campus, etc. So just bearing in mind that there may be opportunities for other things. Anyway, I hope that you, if you go through your life, that you are able to forgive. You are able to let go of things and move forward. I think that there are some really incredibly amazing things out there. And I really want you to really think about how amazing things are going to be. So I'm going to pull one more song for tonight and wrapping up the show. Half the time I'd rather be reading by Port Juvie, playing a little bit more. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. We will be back next week at the sexy hour of 10 o'clock. And coming up at 11 is the amazing Hans von Claus's Misery Hour. He's a very sexy man to be miserable with. He'll be guiding you through the wee hours with his awesome music. And then after that, the wonderful Pyra from Vampire's Ball. Until next week, toodles. Happy Easter.